I've actually got these slides and the source code to this to what I'm going to talk about right here. So if you want to go right now, download it in real time, critique me, go ahead. Hopefully you won't be able to set up the whole test environment in an hour, but we'll see. So I'm a FreeBSD committer. Mostly what I've done is worked on the network stack. And I'll say that TCPDIF was motivated by the fact that most of last summer I didn't get to do any network stack development. I got to do network stack bug fixing for all the optimizations that got put in by other people over the previous year. So that kind of frustrated me, and I was thinking, how can you make sure that doesn't happen again? So hence TCPDIF. So we're going to start talking about what is TCPDIF, how the test apparatus works, how the analysis works. We're going to examine four different bugs that were added and then subsequently fixed and see how well TCPDIF would work to detect those if they happen now, or as typically happens with bugs, if they were reintroduced. And we're talking about systems that can't be tested and future work. So as the conference schedule said, TCPDIF is designed to automatically detect differences in TCP behavior between different versions of an operating system and display those differences in an easy-to-understand format. It looks only at the on-the-wire behavior, what's going on, and any faults it introduces, such as packet loss, it does on-the-wire as well, so that the system you're testing doesn't require any custom modifications. You'll see, however, I almost met that goal. However, TCPDIF is not something that knows whether a TCP stack operates correctly or not. It's just a comparison tool, something that a developer can use to compare versions, you know, 3.57 versus 7.1, or maybe today versus yesterday. But on its own, you can't just run it and get some output that says your TCP stack is good. So here's what the test apparatus looks like. These are virtual machines I'm running under VMware, but could probably be better to use physical machines, but I don't want to start filling up my apartment with lots of computers for this. So you've got the TCPDIF host, which has all the funky setup that I'm going to describe loaded onto it, and you've got the system under test. The red box on the system under test should be over here, but it wouldn't work over there. So the way this test apparatus works at present is the goal is to run the simple client server. Server, all it does is send accept connections, send 64K of data, and then holds the connection. Client connects and, well, waits for 64K of data to come in, sleeps for a second, then exits. So they're 10 lines of Python code each. So that's not too exciting. The real magic is what we do to the packets. So this is all orchestrated by that run test.py and the TCP host. That hooks into everything, sets everything up, runs all these tests. So what it does is, first, it determines a set of packet drops that it wants to run. And I've got those hard-coded. We can see them later. There's some single packet drop patterns, dual packet drop patterns. I think it's something like 30 or 40 patterns I've got right now. I, of course, could expand that to every possible packet drop permutation, but I didn't think that would really improve the results. So what it does is, for each run, set the packet drop pattern, then trigger the client to run. Now, there's two internal tools on the TCPDIF host at work here. The first is PF. I'm using PF's NAT and reader functions so that when the client thinks it's connecting to that machine, actually, NAT is redirecting the connection right back to itself. So the server and client are actually on the same machine. The packets are just passing through the other component. On top of PFDAT is DPD, the deterministic packet discard program that Laura Stewart has written. that actually hooks into the previous VSWNet, and it gives you the option, instead of just saying, I want 5% packet loss, you can say, I want packet 3, 7, and 22 dropped. And it will do that. Lawrence is a, I think he's a PhD student now in network theory, forget which school in Australia. He developed it because he's doing lots of work at TCP congestion algorithms. And actually, he's going to be working a lot more on FreeBSD now, so we should see some interesting things from him soon. So basically, what run test will do is it will, for each of these possible patterns, it will reset the TCP host path in this machine. It will set the packet loss pattern in BPD. It will fire up fresh copies of TCP dump, logging to new files. And then it will trigger client, which will do the fetch of 64K and log the results. Now, this red box here, I found that one problem is that, at least on FreeBSD, the first retransmission after you send a SYN packet, if you don't receive a SYNACK packet, happens in 1 second. At the same time, on the server side, if you send a SYNACK packet, you don't get the app, the third part of the three-way handshake back, you can return the app in 1 second. So what seemed to happen for a lot of these tests when I was first running them is if I dropped the SYNACK packet, both sides retransmitted, well, both sides being the same computer, but both programs caused each side of the socket to retransmit at the same time. So sometimes two packets got sent, sometimes just one, all depending on the time. So what I've done to eliminate that is I've used a IPFW rule to redirect SYN packets to DummyNet, delay those by 30 seconds. So that way, as far as the client side of the socket thinks, it's 30 milliseconds off on its first retransmission time on the server side, so there's not that problem of non-determinism.
So these slides just describe what I said. One thing also about the client I found is I could not do a traditional, you know, read 4K, read another 4K, some sort of loop like that. I had to use the message wait all to read from the socket one big gulp. Otherwise, the TCP window updates that the kernel sends out when you read from the socket buffer would screw results up and things wouldn't happen the same each time. And then since I had a bunch of kernels to test, I then wrote another wrapper script around run tests that puts the new kernel in place, reboots, runs all these tests with the next kernel, tries all those. Any questions so far? Okay. So the if you do a 64K send from the server to client, the whole connection will take, you'll get 27 client to server packets and 49 server to client packets. So I based my packet drops around the start and finish of each of those. So if you're interested in what was dropped, there's the all the different pairs. Here's the try dropping the server's first packet, the server's second packet, the server's third packet. And I tried the client's first packet, client's second packet. These are each, you know, fresh run. And then I tried a number of different combinations of those together. So once we've run all those, we've got a bunch of directories now of, one directory with a whole bunch of TCP dump files, TCAP files. So now we have to look at the results and see what changed. So first thing we got to do is normalize the output. Now, I may have gone too far in normalizing the output, but as you'll see, it works. Possibly in the future, maybe I'll be able to do less normalization. First thing I did, rather than have the IPs and port numbers, just change them into string client to server, server to client. Makes it nice and easy to read and comprehend without having to memorize port numbers in your head. Also, of course, the client port number changes each time.
Second, is there about all the TCP timestamps? And also the base TCP on timestamps, because the time, of course, is different every time. In the future, it'd be nice to change them into relative timestamps, so we can see the relative timing of packets. Well, I'm not quite there yet. The send packets have initial serial numbers. Those have to be normalized. That's pretty straightforward. Reset packets also have, you know, sequence numbers in them. I guess I should normalize them, but none of the valid tests ever really have reset packets in them, in the pins I have so far, so I don't care. Then I have to split it into directional flows, because due to the fact that, you know, acts come as a result of data packets, if you just look at the results of both directional flows together, sometimes your packet ordering is a little bit different. But if you split it, just look at the packets the server sends, and the packets the client sends separate, that is consistent. And I also, to make sure that everything was working right, as you saw, I had two copies of TCP dump running before and after the NAT/packet drop stage. And I said to myself, this is probably a good idea so I can tell if the packet drop's actually working right. And it was a good idea because the initial version of DPD had bugs and was sometimes dropping two packets and sometimes zero and sometimes one. So I discovered a bug in DPD and emailed Lawrence and got that fixed. So of course that feature is still in there, so you can actually look at the logs and see which packet was dropped and verify that it was dropped. Stage two of analysis of your results is to compare this now processed directory or files from one kernel to the processed directory from another kernel. Ideally, this should generate you some nice HTML report or something. I don't have that yet. All we have is unified diff output, which you'll see is actually sufficient for what we need to do, though not as pretty as it could be. So now on to actually looking at some results. So I went through CVS logs and I picked out four bugs, two of which I had to track down and fix, two that other people found, and I built kernels the day before and the day after these changes. Now I didn't want to go all the way back in time when the bugs were added, so I did, because I went to where the fixes were. So there was a bug fixed on 12.04. So I made a kernel from December 5th to December 3rd. These are actually, I should say, this is 2012. So it's December 3rd and December 5th, 2007. So we're getting from. And I'll just run the diff backwards so we can go from the fixed version backwards to the broken version. See what the results look like.
So now this becomes an interactive presentation, because I'm going to pull up the diff and see if anyone can figure out what was broken. Ooh. And where the heck did the cursor go? Hold on. Oh. Uh-oh. Oh, there we go. Okay, I may have to bring the font down a bit. Can people read the font?
Yes.
So, the notation of the files that get output, you see there's a file 00 and then a file 01, and then you'll see 02. That 00 means this was the run where no packets were dropped. 0_1 means this was the run where the first server sent packet was dropped. The run 4_0 being the first client packet was dropped.
So
This guy has, well, we can see there's already a diff even when I'm not dropping any packets. Just under the non-perturbed situation, it's already different. The page down, oh, that's the end, oops. The page down, we can see that there's a lot of changes. Just looking at this first thing, can anyone guess what the bug is?
Could you do stack is disabled? Could you drag the Windows library to the right so we can see where the context is? Just a little bit to the right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Better?
Yeah.
And
stack is turned off on the server.
Yeah, stack is turned off. Someone optimized the TCP option decoding and messed the bits up and dropped the SAC bit on the floor during connection establishment. So it's pretty obvious when you look at this, but it somehow managed to be like that in the tree for I think something like 9 months with nobody noticing. So what?
Maybe we don't need SAC.
One other thing to look at here is, so you can tell from the SYN packets, it's pretty obvious. It's also when you actually get to real data loss, you can tell at that point because in one case SAC blocks are actually being sent, in the other case no SAC blocks are being sent. So yes, so what we just saw was the fix that went in on December 4th. Next one we're going to look at is what happened between the fix. Well, we're going to, of course, see the backward diff going from the fix to the broken state of September 8th back to September 6th of 07. And, well, this would be the case where TCP diff is not provoking this bug to show up. It says there's no differences. So, let's look at what, well, anyone guess what the bug was?
No.
It'll be a little hard. This bug took a long time to track down, and I should be able to make a test case for it, but it's not really related to packet loss or a reaction to packet loss. This is a bug that survived a number of months. What happened is the TCP timers can be four separate callouts were optimized into one to be more efficient, and that changed the semantics of how they worked, and they were doing some pretty weird things where they could actually continue to send packets out after the connection was closed. Now my test program doesn't ever leave, you know, basically as soon as we're done with the socket, we need to close it, it goes away. What I would have to do is write a test driver to run a connection and then actually keep the closed socket. So it'd be a socket that's in a closed state because from the network perspective it's closed, but it still exists, and see if we can get the TCP timer to malfunction. Next one. Actually, I mean, if you look in time, this one is actually, well, pretty close behind. July 30th, or August 1st back to July 30th. This one is similarly disappointing in that it's also not found, or there's no changes found. Now this one, I think David had yelled out the guess as the last time, what was different. I think he's yelled out timing, is that correct? This case, this one is a timing difference.
So this fix, when the tick rate was changed to previously, and I didn't even figure out how far back that happened. Somewhere in the previously 6 development cycle. So probably 3 years ago, if not more. The hertz rate was bumped from 100 to 1,000 hertz with time resolution from 10 milliseconds down to 1. Unfortunately, there were a number of constants in the retransmission logic that were based on the hertz value, or on ticks, assuming that ticks corresponded to 10 millisecond ticks. The one that person who finally noticed this and discovered it was Peter Lim. He got annoyed because his wireless network, I believe, got flipping out for about 10 seconds, and he always loses SSH sessions. He didn't think it was supposed to be happening after 10 seconds. And he finally traced it down to the fact that the minimum, the floor, timer value, the lowest you could go, was based on ticks. So the retransmissions were happening 10 times faster than they were supposed to. This did not generally affect traffic outside of the LAN, though, because those values are scaled to your round trip time. So if you had 100 millisecond round trip time, it was correct. So it's mostly affected LANs. I should be able to enhance this test bench to detect this if I could either improve DPD so I could say drop packet 3 and then drop every packet after that for the next 10 seconds. Or I should probably try improving TCP as so it looks at the packet time, because then I should notice that the second, third, fourth retransmission are too way too quickly.
What does TCP diff do to get the three cap buffer?
Yeah, I just run them through TCP dump into text form, and I parse the text form of TCP dump. I figured that was a lot easier than trying to learn how to disassemble them by hand.
Okay. Because you could also, if you use the PCAP, you can get the timing sense. Right? Because it'll give you, both on every packet.
Yeah. I just decided that was something to do later. Okay. The timing would probably be one of the toughest parts, so I decided to pull off on that CMD bug, that find bug, going to the sign bug.
I'm assuming that if I just had relative timestamps between each packet and kind of rounded them to some amount, I could probably get it to work. Next one. This one does have major differences. And let's take a look at that. So this is going from the fix that went in on July 28th. And this one is one of the most egregious bugs. Now I've got two different files here because the results when I looked at them were so different. I was like, well, maybe there's changes in here that don't even seem to make sense to me. I can probably bring the font down a little bit. That's still okay. For some reason, the when you drop, why is it bouncing like that? In the case where we drop the third server packet, we can see that. I mean, it's really weird. I don't know why it went from ACKing to. Of course, since this is before the SAC fix went in, this is without SAC, so we're missing some context because there's no SAC to help us. But you can see that the packets are just kind of. We're getting quite different behavior. There's another, the data segment got sent later. I'm not even sure what's going on. But it gets weirder as we go down. So you'll notice all the packet drops around the end of the connection. All these one. Sorry, I'm having trouble with the page down thing. Any of the ones involving packets towards the end, no differences. But a lot of these drops that happen towards the beginning of the connection seem to exhibit major differences. And if we get to this one where the second client packet was dropped, you notice the minuses are saying, well, from the good state, there was all this data transmitted, but with the broken kernel, we just got a stream of resets. So the connection isn't even working with the broken kernel. I'm sorry, I keep bouncing around because the page up and page down thing is, I guess I'm viewing and not moving my cursor. So it's probably a big guess, but anyone guess why when I drop the second client packet?
Windows scaling issue.
Not a window scaling issue.
Let's
take a look.
Something in the syntax.
It is something in the syntax. Let me get to it so we can actually. What was the second packet? So, what we dropped.
Oh, okay.
Now, I should mention this drop notation. It's one small flaw with it, and I'll talk about that in future work. Because I'm using diff to determine what got dropped. Diff, when it sees two lines in a row, when you got the line added, it always assumes it's the second one. So, it's claiming it's claiming the retransmission of this packet is the thing that got dropped, and it was the first transmission that got dropped. So in this case here, we dropped the ACK. The SYN got through, the SYN ACK got back. We dropped the ACK packet. Is this the one we wanted, though? Yeah, and you can see that dropping the ACK, the third part of the three-way handshake, destroyed the connection. It was unable to recover. The whole thing was, wow. So, yeah, it was a bug in the SYN cache. The SYN cache had such a major bug that it was unable to ever retransmit SYN ACK packets, and it actually the entry stuck in there. So you couldn't use that port pair until you rebooted the machine. I only stumbled upon this one because I was running various tests from my laptop over wireless, and the packet loss of my wireless link managed to cure this. Spent quite a few weeks trying to figure out what's going on. But yeah, the syntax is completely busted or optimized, depending whether you're going by
reality or the commit message.
Yeah. So that was broken for a year, and we didn't notice. So that's what I'm hoping to prevent. If I get this thing running daily, hopefully when the SYN cache is busted again, we will actually notice within the week rather than a year later when people try testing the pre-release version of FreeBSD 7 and start wondering why they can't accept connections after a certain period of time. Okay, I'm going to try to go full screen again now that we're done And this, I apologize, the viewer application seems to need to pre-cache the whole PDF, so it becomes unresponsive. So unfortunately, I wanted to test more versions of FreeBSD, but I found that I couldn't test some. Versions prior to 4, well, I don't really care about versions prior to 4, that's pretty old. But prior to 4, delayed acts were done with the traditional BSD global timer, so every 200 milliseconds, the PCB list would be locked and a whole slew of delayed acts would be sent out. So they were relative to this 5 times a second, not relative to when the last packet had arrived in that connection. So the timing of them would be totally different every single time you run the test. So not going to work. FreeBSD 6, though, I assumed I knew had the proper timers. FreeBSD 6 should be predictable. Unfortunately, it was not for a different reason. The copying routine that takes data from the user application and puts it in the socket buffers, and of course, in the socket buffers, TCP stack sends it out on the wire. Well, the routine would grab 2K of data, put it in the socket buffer, unlock the socket buffer, TCP stack would fire up. Meanwhile, so they've got two kind of parallel processes, one putting data in, one taking data out. And now, as an optimization, this was changed in FreeBSD 7, so it would take, I'm actually not sure how much data it will take. I don't know if it's 64K or a meg or whatever, but it will grab a whole chunk, put it in the buffer all at once. Well, in 6, where it's still doing it an MBUF cluster at a time, and you'll see soon enough. Okay. What happens is the TCP stack is ahead of the copy, and actually, because there's it ran out of data to send, well, we sent a 1200 byte segment because that's all that was in the buffer at the time we're doing the send, and then more data gets pushed into the buffer, sends more again, runs out again. So every time I run it, I get a different pattern of full-size frames and smaller frames because it was time-dependent. Maybe this was something VMware was helping to aggregate, possibly, because VMware was context switching, malicious stuff. But on the other hand, maybe on a physical machine with quad processors, it would be far worse because we could actually have these two processes running in parallel. I don't know. The funny part about this is I mentioned this to Mike Carls, who was involved in early PSD design in the 80s. I said, why did you do this stupidly like this? And he said, well, on the machines at the time, this was an optimization because if you had to wait for those processors to copy in 64K of data at a time, that was taking a lot of time. So you wanted to get the data going on the wire as soon as possible. So that's why it handed over 2K chunks to the stack and start sending it. So a design decision from the 80s that doesn't necessarily apply to our machines today. So if I backport the copy routine from FreeBSD 7 back to 6, then FreeBSD 6 should be testable. And given that maybe I should do that, and then hopefully after that point, FreeBSD 6 with TCP stack should hopefully never change again since it's kind of at that stage of its life. So I may or may not do that. Any questions before I discuss the future work? Yes?
Is TCP diff in the tree yet?
No. I could put it in the tree. Well, what I'm thinking of doing,
maybe I'll put it in the tree, maybe not. But the thing I was thinking of doing is sending out for a nightly run, so either send out emails or update a web page. Just, I think this test setup is too complex to
not complex, too time consuming to say, well, why didn't you set up a bunch of virtual machines like Mike did and run this tool?
Well, my feeling is if you're going to work on the GCP stack, you should have a reasonable testing. You shouldn't allow people to test the GCP stack if they're not testing.
Okay, that's a good point, too. I think setting it up so I get emails once a day is probably going to be more effective.
Yeah, if you put it in the tree, I'll run.
You've got a tools regression subdirector in the source tree.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Sure. Well, okay, then I guess that would be the first feature work that they checked. if you want it right now, though, it is on that URL. Or Earl, depending on how you pronounce that. Is there another? Yes.
So there's a set of potential bugs that you can have between clients and servers and different versions of the device.
Yes.
That human CMS environment.
That is very true.
Is the framework flexible enough to put the client and server on different machines?
For the most part, yeah. I should say the framework is entirely not flexible right now. I didn't design it to be flexible. I wasn't setting up to design a framework. I was designing something to get done what I wanted to test. But it would be easy enough to just change the PF rules so that instead of reflecting packets back through, instead is just sending them on to the next virtual machine. So that's just a true trivial, yes. I partially didn't do that because that would be another more test cases. That's certainly easy. So, running at 90 is good. But of course, major fix would be move that SIM delay I'm doing on the client, on the machine under test, over to the TCP that most where it should be. I started that way initially, but it turns out when you stack dumbing pipes, weird things happen. I was getting random extra packets dropped. No, I was getting random extra packets repeated, that's what I did. So I don't know if anyone else has ever tried stacking WNET pipes or not, but they apparently does not work. So I would have to go fix WNET.
Just use a bridge and the time interface.
I was thinking of that too, but I couldn't figure out how to get to, I set up a ton interface, but I could only attach one bridge to it. I couldn't attach two bridges. So if someone knows how to do, if you know how to do that.
You have two ton interfaces, so two bridges, throw it back to 10 bridges.
Yeah, if it works, then that would be great. I just couldn't figure out the magic implication to get all these bridges, series of bridges hooked up, but that would certainly be the best option. Well, no, actually, I guess fixing the code would be the best option. That would be less time-consuming to work around.
It turns out to be pretty easy. If you're just eavesdropping on packets, it might inflate a little, sniffing the pipe. Like hours
for
the code.
Well, I may get to that eventually. But that would be necessary then for me to fully test other operating systems. Right now you could test other operating systems, but you'd have that SIM-SYNAC retransmitting at the same time issue. That would make it so subsequent runs may show differences. Now it's obvious when you look at them what happened, but it's annoying to have to filter them yourself. You could have a program that's working. Fix the drop packet notation. As you saw in that thing, it mislabels which packet was dropped. It was sort of retransmitted the exact same packet. That's just cosmetic, but it would be nice to fix so you're looking at the output. It makes more sense. But that would not affect the results. I should add more test cases. I'm just doing one very simple thing, server-side data. I've been trying to find some data or anything where there's some maybe user-level echo server type thing where you send data to the response. These would all be different scenarios that I think both should be made. That's a few of the things there. I should have more drop patterns. I'm not dropping perhaps enough packets. Certainly, if you think about it, dropping one packet would, all you do is test from the congestion control perspective, you'd be testing the, is it fast retransmitter or is it fast recovery? whatever. You know, there's also, you know, there's one set of TCP things that does, with one packet drop, and then with two or three packets that drop, different mechanisms get involved. So dropping more packets would be good to test all those mechanisms. And I should actually try out other OSs. Those issues I said with FreeBSD prior to 4 and FreeBSD prior to 7 may exist in the other BSDs and may make them harder to test. I don't know. I haven't tested them yet.
Everybody wants that. The world is ending.
I should make the reports friendlier than the GitHub, but I should make it like an HTML colorful file. It says, congratulations, nothing changed. Or, here are the differences. I may continue what I did with, you know, I just looked at 4 known bugs. Really what I should do is go look at some other bugs with the number of things that, you know, I mean, the best way to predict future bugs is to look at what bugs you had in the past. So make sure maybe I can get up to 10, 12, 16 different fire bugs and verify that the code actually tests and checks for all of those. That'd be a good thing to do. It'd be nice to test the firewall. Okay, 10 minutes?
Yeah, there it is.
Okay, well, it's like the last slide, so. I should try setting up a 3 virtual machine setup, so what we're doing is running packets through PF or IPFW and plus the packet drops. I don't know, I mean, I guess it shouldn't be any different, right? But maybe there's a bug in one of those we'll find, so that we'd be testing the firewall. Well, as I said, I backported the stock code for change to 6. That would be the same test. Of course, it would be very ironic if I backported something to make the test bench easier to run and grow previews to 6 process because I did it wrong. But hopefully, I would not make that mistake. Or at least hopefully, someone would call me on it quicker than a year later.
So.
All I got. Any questions? Comments? Yes.
Okay.
I believe it's a string of A's.
Strange string of B's.
I have not been. I could try a string of B's.
Well, different method might be useful anyway, because packets could be dropped.
That's true. Yeah, in fact, I think some of those hardware checks and offload bugs only trigger certain types of data, so I should do that. That would be another test case. Another possibility to stress, like, hardware check something, well, of course, I'm not going to stress hardware check something at VMware, but maybe I should send 50K of data, and then, you know, they do like some kind of echo server thing. Send 2 bytes, the guy has those 2 bytes back. Send 3 bytes, the other guy has 3 bytes back. So I'm sending not full size packets all the time. That would be another thing. Yes?
Have you, this is done, I guess, with Nagel off, right?
With what?
Nagel.
I did not actually turn Nagel off.
Okay.
But
the reason it didn't change, that probably didn't work. Work to change for
what is Nagel?
Nagel is the
small packet avoidance. So it's the thing that gets turned on when you're on your interactive application. Yeah, and it will change the timing of the test, and Nagel is the source of Nagel.
That's
the interesting to see what you just get for
us. That's true. And for people who are interested, I threw an extra slide in on my experiences with VMware. getting your clock, well, I use VMware on top of Windows. On top of Windows because, well, I can't run on top of FreeBSD, and my fastest machine is the one I bought for playing video games, so it was easiest to use it for VMware in its gaming downtime. And, well, that provoked a question.
Well, it was a question about this, but it's about the difference between 6 and 7 you're talking about.
Yes.
I have a question there. You mean that does it cook the 2 gigabytes at a time, or for each space, to be honest, space? Does it use 0.1 space? And then, is it not proper for
what? What was the last part?
Yeah, I thought previously used the 0.0 with the false bit packets.
There's 0.0 code that's skipped out now, you can compile them.
Okay, but it's usually, it's not the total.
It's normally turned off.
Okay.
I think the zero copy, I think the new code cap looks like this optimized copy routine that does a whole chunk, or the zero copy routine that probably has not been tested at all.
Okay.
Still sitting there. So, yeah, by default, it would not be zero copy. You have to actually reach file. I think it's reach file, right? It's not.
Yeah,
maybe
it's a. Yeah, it is.
But of course, that also, that optimization for that issue also probably means that there's some, has TS opened that port in 6? If someone backports TSO to previous in 6, it probably needs to kind of work all that hard to try to tell the NIC to segment all TPM data for you.
The main thing I'd run into is timing on VMware. Turns out that even if your guest operating system is not using the TSD out of the CPU, VMware itself is. And I have the misfortune that I bought an Athlon X2, which generally works well, but it has totally desynced TSCs all the time, and that just drives VMware batty. And therefore, it gives the guest bad time.
There's a, under Windows at least, AMD has a tool called the Dual Core Optimizer that keeps trying to keep them in sync. And that mostly works, but I had to just disable the both processes and go back to single core, because it turns out those bad TSCs also caused Warcraft 3 to crash. And that was really... runs fine in single core, though, so I fixed all my timing problems by going back to single core.
What is this Dual Core Optimizer?
It's a Windows app, and I think there might be some Linux.
Windows on the box.
Well, in that case, yeah.
Okay.
Well, it may be that, well, I mean, if you're running VMware on Linux, I'm sure it's got a whole different set of issues with how that hooks into the timing.
Okay.
The Athlon X2s, I guess, just get totally, it's, even if you don't speed shift, even if you stay at your max megahertz all the time.
Not baseline. Yeah, I see them drift on my X2.
Apparently they drift every time you just do a halt or something.
Yeah, I
read up about it, and then I got really frustrated with the bottom one. Because they apparently didn't try to make them stay synced whatsoever. So I think there's some Linux utilities for trying to keep them in sync. But apparently it's this. I guess you can, yeah. It's got to be if it's keeping them in sync. I think the kernel, ring zero can. Apparently, like core twos though have somewhat auto-synchronized stuff. It's hard to get them out of sync, whereas it's hard to keep the Athlons in sync. So, also set your tick rate down to 100 if you're using VMware for Linux or Windows, because at 1,000 hertz, the VMware can't keep up, and then stuff drifts. Other than that, it seems to work pretty well. I guess I'm probably out of time, right? Or any final questions? Yes?
64K, enough data to really test the window sizes?
No. That's a good point. One of the tests I should do is wrap up to much larger sizes. So we can actually get the window to scale out. That's something should be done. Oh, yes.
Question, most of your testing is on packet blocks.
Yes.
Anything with packet injection?
No. Well, I guess I did by accident, but it was injecting packets on me unintentionally. Right. So, no, I have not done any of that yet. That would be something interesting to do as well. Although I don't think packet injection is as common as the case on the internet. I mean, for an attack scenario, it might be, but I don't know if it's really, if it happens out there in the wild or not. But that would be something else to test.
I did packet drops because it seemed like a common thing that was easy to try, so it's a starting point. And hopefully, once I get it up and running, some sort of daily tinderbox type thing, hopefully then maybe other people will be going ahead to implement some features so I can do things like packet injection. Other questions? Okay. Thank you.